I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel in my heart.
Joining us now is Patricia T. O'Connor, who is the author of number of books on the English language, and also a regular contributor to this show, also the person behind Grammophobia.com, which is her blog, a blog that many of our listeners go to partly because it's often inspired by things that happen on the show or in exchanges you have with our listeners.
Right. Often people who don't get on the air with a question or they'll say, I was too shy, but this is my question. So I hear a lot from people who are your listeners.
And today you want to talk about neologisms.
Right.
There are a lot of neologisms. Some wind up becoming successes, some failures.
Right.
Some last for a while and then die out.
Right. Usually the neologisms we hear about are the success stories, but nobody talks about the losers. And I suspect that there are a whole lot more unsuccessful neologisms than successful ones. The later we get in our language, the more words have been invented. For instance, Shakespeare is credited with something like 1,300 neologisms, but I doubt that he sat around inventing words. The point with him is that he was the first to get into print with these, so he has the first published evidence of the word, and he's credited with having invented it. But, you know, that's the only way we can define a neologism, but there are a lot of neologisms that really didn't make it. Some are sort of, it's too bad they didn't get into the language. But you were talking earlier with a guest about William Dean Howells, and actually he had a failed neologism that I think it would be nice if it were revived. The verb blat, B-L-A-T, meaning to blurt something out, to blat something.
He blatted out,
right. So Howells had one, and actually when people talk about their favorite words, everybody, many people will say serendipity, or it'll be at the top of their list. That was a neologism. It was invented by Horace Walpole. But Walpole had a lot of duds as well. He invented...
Even his own name sounds like a neologism. Walpole.
Walpole, exactly. He invented the word muckibus, which means drunkenly sentimental. That didn't make it into the lexicon.
Now, but before you go on,
right?
There's usually a reason for the word muckabus, for example. there must be some reason. It doesn't sound like drunkenness.
It doesn't sound
to
like
me.
what it means. It doesn't sound like drunkenly
usually
sentimental.
Usually, there's some kind of a logical connection. I know,
right.
I've invented a few words over the breakfast table and then promptly forgotten them, but they usually are kind of semi-puns,
right?
And many of the neologisms are that, or they're
right.
Or they're useful variants on words we already know,
right? Or they should be echoic, you know? They should sound like what they mean. But muckibus doesn't sound like drunkenly sentimental.
No.
Now another invention of Walpole was greenth.
Greenth?
Greenth, G-R-E-E-N-T-H, to mean vegetation. Greenth. I mean, really, it doesn't exactly...
Sounds like vegetation with a lisp.
It does. And he came up with nebobical. It's the adjective form for nabob.
Mm-hmm.
Nebobical. Mercifully, those words died along with Walpole.
Did William Sapphire know about that?
I don't know. I don't know. He may have.
A nattering, nabobical man.
Right. Now, Thackeray had one, mellophonist.
Mellophonist?
Mellophonist, meaning a singer.
Hmm.
Now,
what's wrong with singer?
See, that's the problem. The simpler word usually is the one that lives on. And even Shakespeare had a lot of losers. For instance, Lewdster Lewdster. Lewdster.
Well, I can figure out what that
person,
means.
A lewd person. Pudency.
Pudency?
Pudency. P-U-D-E-N-C-Y. Pudency.
I'm afraid to ask what that means.
Bashfulness.
Oh, okay.
Now, see, it doesn't sound like bash. It sounds sounds unseemly.
Yes.
Yes. Sprag, which means clever. Acture. A-C-T-U-R-E. Taking action. Acture.
What play is that in?
I don't know. Credent, trusting. Immoment, meaning trifling. Shunless, unavoidable. And a favorite of mine, fustilarian, which was his word for a fat, frowsy woman.
Well, how would you use acture in a sentence?
Well, you know, acture is a noun meaning taking action. So I would think action itself could be used.
Yeah.
Instead of
take acture.
Right. And even Dickens, who came up with a lot of really good words, he invented dustbin. For example,
oh, I like
footlights.
That but that's not a neologism. Is that a neologism,
footlights.
A dustbin?
A dustbin. It hadn't been used before he got it in
print. Footlight.
Butterfingers, sawbones, even tousled, devil may care. He did a lot of really good words, but he had some duds, too.
But he sounds like he's a lot more successful than Horace Walpole.
I think so. Yeah, far and away. Dickens's losers include metropolitaneously, which means in a city-like fashion. Ponging, which means declaiming theatrically. And pruny, meaning prim or affected. Now, I like pruny.
Yeah, but it would suggest something else to me.
Well, yeah, pruned up.
That person was very pruny.
Pruned up, kind of pursed lips.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then I have a little final burst of them, of my very favorites. Goosery, meaning silliness. That was by John Milton.
Mm-hmm. But that makes sense, goosery.
It does, goosery, because people used to say you goose or goosiness. So silliness, goosery, that sort
goose.
Of makes sense. But here's one. Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the word is pedoeuvre, which means an action performed by the feet.
He was a drug addict.
Yeah, it's so useful. Anthony Trollope, elsewords, meaning towards some other place.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, pelurious. That's a James Joyce word for hairy. And finally, my all-time favorite, this is Graham Greene's euphemism for a public toilet, urinoir.
Yeah, well, that was cleaning up the French.
Yes.
Our number here, by the way, is 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're talking about the language with Patricia T. O'Connor. And we talk about a lot of different things. You don't have to call in about a neologism. You don't even have to know how to pronounce the word. But we talk about all sorts of grammatical things and sometimes even figure out the origins of certain words. I'd imagine all words were originally neologisms.
At one time or another. There had to be
somebody
first
said,
time.
Ugh. And somebody said, no, that's...
That's erg. Right. Usually... a neologism is just simply a new word or phrase or one that's new to the language. And at some point, it has to appear in print for the first time. There has to be some first evidence, and whoever gets there first gets credit for being the neologist.
Well, if they work well, you mentioned some that were successes.
Mm-hmm.
Dustbin, for example.
Right,
well,
right.
Dustbin
It still means garbage can in Britain. I mean, that's what they...
And if I say dustbin in this country, people know what I'm saying as
yes,
well.
Yes, right. I wish you could remember some of the breakfast neologisms you came up with. If any pop into your mind...
I always say at that point, I should remember that.
Right. You should
and then
carry
I probably
a little
forget
pad
them.
And pencil.
Anne in North Bergen, New Jersey writes, can you please comment on the meta epidemic? In classical Greek, the prefix simply meant between or after. Aristotle's Metaphysics was the work placed between his physics by manuscript compilers. Lately, I seem to find meta being brandished as an all-purpose token of mighty intellectual purpose. So I'm not sure what purpose. Sometimes it seems to mean something like self-referential. Sometimes it just seems to be in cloud cuckoo land.
That's a good one, cloud cuckoo land. But I think that's from one of the ancient Greek plays.
Is it cloud cuckoo?
I think so, cloud cuckoo land. But anyway, meta, right, it's one of those prefixes that seems to be everywhere today. It actually has a lot of meanings. It can be later in time, so people can use meta if they think that their product or their idea or whatever is particularly advanced. They could use meta, or it can mean situated behind.
How does it work in metaphor?
Let's see, metaphor. I'm not sure how that comes about.
I'm sorry, you.
That's okay.
I interrupted you.
No. But it has a lot of different meanings. But metaphor, figure of speech, da-da-da-da-da. I see. One thing is used to mean another. Well, see, the between idea there would be the meaning of a metaphor is something between one thing and another. So there you go.
Laura on the Upper West Side says, goosery sounds like what pretty women suffer at the hands of rude strangers in crowded subway cars.
I've heard of such things, of course. But
also, ponging in British slang now means stinking, as in bad body odor.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Huh,
so
interesting.
So some neologisms make comebacks.
I guess so. But actually, another form of neologism is using a word in a new sense. So perhaps the person who first used pong to mean to smell bad was neologizing.
I would have thought that it had something to do with a video game.
Right.
And you'd be ponging as a result. We go now to a caller, Linda from Princeton, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I love your show. It's the most useful educational show on radio.
Oh, thank you.
The first meta I can think of is Metamucil, whatever that means. Okay.
We won't go there.
No, we won't. The word in Latin...
Well, I think it means between the devil and the deep blue sea.
Yeah. The word in Latin, I remember this years ago when I lobbied for Planned Parenthood. The Latin for genitals was derived from the word for shame, and it was pudenda. So when you were bringing up the subject of pudency, when you said bashful, it may well derive from that shame thing. And in obstetrics, still the word is a pudendal block for anesthesia. And so it's shame-related. The thing I wanted to ask you is I hear so many people, mostly on radio, beginning their sentences in response to an interviewer's question, so what we did then was so, instead of, I guess, well or
right.
Have you noticed that?
Linda, you won't believe this, but for about the last year, that's been the most frequent question I get on my website.
Wow.
People say, I'm listening to the radio, and someone is beginning every question with, so, what are you working on now? And the responder says, so, I've got a play opening off Broadway.
But it's more likely people in the sciences.
It is.
Well, it's
right.
Everybody.
It's everybody.
Yeah.
But,
so what?
Anyway.
So what's that all about?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
I think
do you have a theory?
Do I have a
theory? No, I was asking Pat.
Maybe Linda has a theory.
Linda, do you have a theory?
I believe it's anxiety mixed with aggression, both, a bit of both psychologically.
I see it as a progression kind of a thing.
I think so. There's no logical bridge to get the person to that question or to that response. And the word so seems to be a little bridge. It's a little conjunction.
It's the way for the same reason that many people start off a lot of sentences with and.
Exactly. It gives the impression that you're launching yourself from something that was already said or from some logical point. And, in fact, you may be starting in the middle of nowhere And so starting with the word so makes it sound like you're less at sea.
David from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Leonard, good afternoon. I was wondering about the, you were talking about Dickens and the origin of when Dickens began to be used in common language, like what the Dickens does that mean? And you don't hear it too often anymore, but people used to use it quite a bit.
Right, and also people were called Dickenses, like what a little Dickens he is. I don't think that's related to Charles Dickens. It's supposed to be an alteration of devil, influenced by the name Dickens. But this often happens in English. People will say, "Why Tom, Dick, and Harry?" And there's no reason. They were just common names. Or why a Dear John letter? Why not a Dear Harry letter? There are certain names that have been seized on for no particular good reason.
You notice it's never Dear Leonard.
You never get a Dear Leonard letter, right? No particular reason. Often just the euphony of it, as in what the Dickens. It was a euphemism, what the devil. Maybe the person didn't want to say what the devil, so he says, what the Dickens? Sounds like that.
Like
so it's a euphemistic.
Right, in this case, it is interesting that the person whose name is being invoked here is somebody who created a whole bunch of neologisms himself.
Oh, yes, yes.
We will take a little break and come back with more of your calls and comments to Patricia T. O'Connor, whose books include Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, You Send Me, Origins of the Specious, Woe Is I, Jr. Have I left anything out?
Gone with the Wind.
Oh, you wrote Gone with the Wind. And War and Peace, I understand.
Yeah, right.
And our number here is 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org.
Oh, baby, what I'd give to hear those three little words.
We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor talking about the English language with you at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Margaret in Montauk writes, one of my favorite neologisms is pepier, like sommelier, but the guy who brings the peppermill to the table.
Yes, yes, that's a wonderful one, pepier.
Oh, it's pepier.
Pepier.
I've always wondered about those people. Why doesn't the chef just put the right amount of salt and pepper into the food and
put the pepper thing on the table so you can use it yourself.
Yeah. Well, and just grind it. Maybe they're afraid. I think the reason for that is that people steal them.
But they're usually like the size of the baseball
bat. Yeah, well,
bat.
Only the big ones, yes. They look like they were bought at certain kinds of stores we can't discuss on the show. Our next caller is Michelle from Croton-on-the-Hudson. Hi. Is it Croton-on-the-Hudson or Croton-on-Hudson?
Croton-on-Hudson.
Oh,
I added the. So two really big pet peeves I have, and it started that I'd hear it just every day in everyday speech, but increasingly I hear it, for example, on NPR. So the first one, no particular order because they're both extremely irritating to me. The first one is the use of couple, a couple of something, in which I was taught and I think is correct, is sort of alternative for a pair, not actually connected like a pair of scissors. But so people drop the of, and even though they keep the a, which indicates a couple is a noun, they use it as though it's a prime number.
Mm.
You know.
You mean a couple cups?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've never heard that.
Yeah, people increasingly are dropping the of. You wouldn't say a pair of shoes or a brace pheasants. You say a couple of this or that. But it's it's considered acceptable if you're using it with numbers, like a couple hundred.
Mm-hmm.
A couple hundred people were at the event.
In fact, it sounds weird to say a couple of a hundred people.
Oh yeah, right. but yeah, I think that probably this is one of those things that we could see a usage change here, and this of with couple could fall by the wayside.
Well,
eventually,
like graduate high school.
Yeah.
People say
right.
that more and more.
Right. And the truth about usage is that what is correct is what the majority common usage among educated people is. So if everyone starts saying, I have a couple tickets for the baseball game, which, you know, many, many people do, it's going to become standard to drop the of. And it'll start to sound a little quaint to add it. But usage does change in English. Grammar, not so much. Usage, yeah, it does.
We have a caller who prefers to remain anonymous. Hi, you're on the air. Who is also either cooking or doing something else.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Oh, hi. I didn't realize I was anonymous. My name is Leslie. I have made up some names. Actually made them up, so I'm a real neologist.
Mm. Okay.
which I've inflicted on my family, and now they're all saying it. When I look through my wardrobe, I always tell my daughter I'm looking for some blice.
Blice? Oh, blouses. Yes.
and when I'm inviting people to dinner, I say, and you can bring your spice.
Spouses, right.
It's just for fun, but we have a lot of fun with that. And of course,
but do you turn that around? Do you say something is very nouse?
I thought of that. Well, what about people in heists? People who live in heists?
People living in glass heists shouldn't throw stones.
And my other one for which I'm famous in my family is going to the Benry because the bank. Because you have Henry and Hank. So why isn't the bank the formal name for it? The Benry. My daughter now says, I'm going to the Benry, Mom.
So, okay. Get thee to a Benry.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you for calling us. Yeah. You know who I think may be the most prominent neologist today? J.K. Rowling.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I think Muggle might already be in the OED.
And a whole bunch of
sure.
Other words that she's invented get used regularly by people I don't understand.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other matter.
Right.
Marin in Bloomfield, New Jersey, sent in this neologism. Acture, love made them not. Oh, this is expensive.
Acture. Oh, that's the
love made them not. With acture, they may be. From Shakespeare's poem, A Lover's Complaint. And Dan left this comment. Ponging means malodorous might derive from ponging, pongled. Well, I can't read that. Okay. Ponged, which is meaning apes in general or orangutans in particular. Listener Red Hook says, my family had a word for food mill, a dilver. Consequently, I grew up thinking that was a word that rhymed with silver.
A dilver was a food mill.
Yeah, I don't know why it was, but and we can't ask that listener because the listener wrote it in. Vinny on the Upper West Side says, I've always liked sneezer to describe a prolonged episode of nasal allergic reactivity.
I like that a lot, sneezer.
Yeah.
Now, my husband Stuart performs sneezer because he never does one simple achoo sneeze like a normal person. He has a long episode of sneezer, so I'm going to remember that one. It's almost like seizure, a seizure of sneezing, sneezer. Like it.
We go now to Tom from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Tom.
Excuse me. Hello.
Yes, Tom.
Hi. One thing is a friend of mine is actually working this neologism. Well, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's if you're the gender-neutral term for all of your brothers and sisters is your siblings.
Uh-huh.
She's saying, what are your nieces and nephews?
Niblings.
Is that around?
I don't know. It just seemed like a logical conclusion. Sorry, yeah. I stepped on your line.
Right. It seems Niblings, to work better though. For little nieces and nephews. I don't think my 15-year-old niece would appreciate it. But.
Thank you for calling us.
You're welcome. Okay.
Niblings is pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds like something G.K. Rowling would actually have invented. Warren from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Leonard. Hi, Pat. I wanted to explain the meta, how it came to get used in that way that was described. Pat is correct about metaphysics, and all it means is that it came after the physics. But in philosophical usage, it started to come up when philosophers began to work with formal languages, and they were using languages to describe those languages, which were equally formalized. And so when you had an artificial language, it was called the object language, and the language that was used to describe it was called the meta language. But this is a very old kind of idea in philosophy, because you get paradoxes when sentences, for example, the liar paradox, what I am saying now is a lie. This is a paradox, because it's true if and only if it's false. And, mm-hmm. you know, your listeners can work that out in their own time, but it's an old kind of element in philosophy to be consciously talking about a language and to distinguish the two. Now, in addition to that, there 20th century Anglo-American philosophy took what's called a linguistic turn and started to be about language, started to see philosophical problems as relating to confusions about language. Mm-hmm. And so you had a turn from ethics to meta-ethics, and people started to ask, well, what are we saying when we're criticizing something or calling something good? And there was a quip from one person who was reacting to this trend. She said, her name is Elizabeth Anscombe. She said, I used to think philosophy was getting better and better, but now I think it's getting meta and meta. So this is where this all came from. And then somehow it found its way into public discourse, mm-hmm. and then became a word for when you're sort of moving up a level and describing something rather than just doing it.
Of course, yeah. Metamorphosis works in the other direction for Kafka.
Oh, it does, yes. Well, yes. Well, Leonard, I'll not try to match you on the air.
When it comes to insects, I always win.
You can look it all up. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty terrific. Thank you for telling us that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye. And Marty, you want to talk about Dickens?
Well, maybe not particularly Dickens, but Bernard Levin, in a marvelous compilation of words and phrases that are used frequently in the English language that either derive from Shakespeare or are first found in Shakespeare, discovered that what the Dickens can be found in Merry Wives of Windsor. I thought that was a nice little connection between two of the great poets that you've cited on the show.
Really?
He
what
says,
the Dickens
he
is says in Merry Wives of Windsor?
Really?
The dictionary here says it was it's a euphemism for devil, but was influenced by the name Dickens. So maybe Shakespeare was very prescient.
Somewhere or other, I noted precisely where, but it may be that everybody will have to go onto the internet website.
Yeah, we'll have to look it up.
Well, thank you so much for calling us. Elaine from Baltimore says, when my daughter sets the table, she asks me for the plattery. I like that.
That's nice.
And Marge from Chelsea, hi, you're on the air. Marge, are you there?
Marge's radio was on,
okay,
too.
Marge. We thank you very much for your call. Maybe we'll get to you later. We go now to Mike from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have two portmanteau words. One which means little things which get in the way, mm-hmm. and that portmanteau word is impedimenta.
That's
with,
really
with,
great.
Of course, the A-E in the middle. And the other one means to, the other one is to set your mind to do something and then to actually do it. That is motivate and then mobilize, and the word is mobilate.
That's mm-hmm. wonderful.
All right, thank
I
you.
Like those.
Yeah, but when you use them, do people understand what you're saying? Hello? Okay. Well, anyway.
That reminds me of
this delay is driving people crazy. They have to stay on the phone.
Right. His portmanteau words reminded me of one that I think was from Nathaniel Hawthorne. Locomutation, which means moving from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that nice? Locomutation.
Gabby in Jackson Heights writes, my 7-year-old son has always said hanitizer for sanitizer, which is very
another good. Another good one.
And Cynthia from West Orange, hi, you're on the air.
I've been curious for a long time about need plus an infinitive phrase. Sometime between 76 and 79, when I was living in Atlanta, was when I first heard it. Mm-hmm. But by the time I moved back north, I was hearing it all over. Like, I'd ask for directions, and I was told, you need to go to the next corner and then turn right. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was quaint that it was a Southernism. But by the time I'd moved back north, I was hearing it all over the place, and I never remember hearing that as a young person.
Right. I heard it in Iowa when I was growing up. To bake a cake, to crack an egg, you need to hit it on the bowl like so, and you need to do this and you need to do that.
But growing up in this area in the 30s and then some, I really never heard it. And I've always been very speech conscious, you know, word conscious. So I just wondered, did it start someplace else in the United States and then work its way up to this metropolitan area? I don't know.
That particular one I can't tell you, but there are a lot of other idiomatic uses of need, like... You'll hear a lot in the South, the car needs washed.
Mm-hmm.
Or he needs spanked. That child needs spanked. So there are a lot of idiomatic uses of needs. I talked about that once on my blog, but it's and they are regional. But that one you mentioned, I don't know where that comes from.
Let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul.
Oh, good afternoon.
And you wanted to talk about another neologism?
The term third world.
Mm.
We use that to refer to poor nations.
Developing nations, yeah.
But the origin of it goes way back to, along with me, to the early 1950s, to the Cold War.
Now, Cold War is also a neologism, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is true. And the third world was came about this way. The first world was the bloc of Western nations, United States, France, UK, etc. The second world was the Eastern bloc, which was the Soviet Union, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And the third world was the group of non-aligned or neutral nations, India, Egypt, etc. at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the original meaning of it. It had nothing to do with economics, wealth, poverty, anything like that, although now it's associated with poverty.
Well, most of those countries were the poorer countries of the world, and they weren't included in the other groups.
As developing India or Asia, Africa, Latin America.
So now we call them the developing nations. But I mean, that's not really a neologism, is it?
Well, as a phrase, it could be. Yeah, neologism can be a phrase, too.
Now, Patricia T. O'Connor will be back on our show September 21st. But if you want to ask her a question, you can email her directly at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. And you can also click on Pat's blog at grammarphobia.com to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. And people send me all sorts of things as a result of this conversation. I just forward them to you because you are the expert, not me. But I look forward to experiencing some more of your expertise on September. Well, I won't be here September 21st. Somebody will be here. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.